What's interesting is, I always want to try to engage you immediately. Maybe you don't realize that I do this, so maybe I shouldn't be telling you how the sausage is made. But one of the first things you need to do when you're speaking to somebody is you need to make them care. You need to make them understand why you're talking to them. And our pastor, when he used to preach when I was a teenager, he used to get up something like this. "Well, that was a fine song. Very lovely. We were all very moved by the Lord. Why don't you go ahead and pull out your Bibles? Let's pull out our Bibles. And why don't we just get excited and read God's word together?" Boy, I was done. I mean, I had no idea what was even going on. I didn't care. I was already passing notes to my friends, and please stop talking to me. And so this week, as I was thinking about generosity, there was a quote that kept coming up to me, and I thought, Lord, I don't find this very engaging. Like, I would rather have something more engaging. And then Tom shared his testimony that I was only vaguely aware of, kind of where he wanted to go with it. And then Mac shared a testimony that very much tied in it. And now this quote that God kept putting in front of me is a lot more meaningful than it was. Many of you are aware of Dave Ramsey, and you know the work he does to try to help people dig out of financial pits that they blame on everybody but themselves. And Dave Ramsey said that the great sickness of American society is one word: selfishness. It's the great sickness of American society. It's the reason that we get into further debt. We aren't always generous to others, but we usually are fairly generous to ourselves, even if we can't. We say, well, I can't afford to be generous, but oftentimes we are generous to ourselves in ways that we can't afford, and we're very quick to do that. And I start thinking about, sometimes it is easier for me to give my money than for me to give my emotion or my time to people. I think there was a time that writing checks was not very high on people's list, but now sometimes people say, I'll write you $100 if you'll leave me alone. If you'll stop asking me to teach Sunday school, here's $200. Just leave me be. And so I think about this. When we're talking about generosity, I really am giving you a bigger picture of what we're talking about. So oftentimes in seminary, we would talk about different messages, generosity, and we're talking about people's possessions. But I've really been encouraged by this, by these two messages. I've learned a lot, and I'm hoping that it just encourages you. Remember, when you're talking about the selfishness that people deal with, when we use the word generosity, I'm saying generosity is learning how to make calculations for someone other than yourself. It's easy to make calculations for yourself. Generosity means you start making calculations beyond yourself, beyond what you want to do and beyond what's important to you. And so now you begin to expand. And so last week we began walking through these, and today we're going to finish them. These are the steps of a generous giver. And last week we started with the first one, potential. The idea that everyone has the potential to be a giver. When I was a teenager, my dad was telling me to give. I didn't think that I actually had the ability or the potential to do that. And part of that was based on how he said I had to give. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. But once you understand that you have the potential to give, then you move into being a priority giver. That you say, I want to give to God first. We talked a little bit about first fruits. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But now we're going to take a look at the next two. And so I want you to see, these are steps. You can't just decide to jump onto proportional. And quite honestly, that's where a lot of our churches have been in the past. That's how I was taught, that the first step is proportional giving, giving a tithe, giving 10%. But I didn't understand my potential, and it wasn't a priority for me. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a step. It's a path along. So we're going to look at proportional, and then we're going to look at partnering giving. So last week we were in 1 Corinthians. It was kind of this first encouragement that came from Paul. Now it's been a year later, and he writes 2 Corinthians, and we get this next step. So take a look with me. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We're going to read verses 1 through 8 and see this encouragement that he's giving. He's already shown them what their potential is. He's already shown them the priority. Now he's going to be encouraging them towards these next steps. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 8. We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. Accordingly, we urged Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. But as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and all earnestness in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. So the step that we see here is this step of being a proportional giver. When you look at verse 3, he says that they gave according to their means, not according to a church standard. He said according to their means. And so Paul is actually encouraging the Corinthians by the testimony of the Macedonians. People who lived in Macedonia, they were believers. Paul had given them the same encouragement to bring a collection to help support these believers who were living in Jerusalem, who were living in poverty, who were being severely persecuted because they had chosen to follow Jesus. And he says that they were giving according to their means. That means according to their power, according to their ability, according to what they actually received. When you look at verse 2, it tells us that these people were not well-off people. Verse 2 says that they were in a severe extreme poverty. It's one thing to say someone's in poverty. It's another thing to say they're in extreme poverty. And that's where these people were coming from. But yet, so they had less income flowing in. Instead of ceasing to be generous, they adding to their means. You know why they could do that? Grace. Grace. They knew why they were giving. They weren't giving because Paul made them. They were giving out of a love response and saying, you know what? If we're all doing this together, if we're all partnering together, then there's still going to be an impact made. And that's the word that keeps coming out. So we want to take a look at this idea of being personal in our giving, being strategic in our giving. And I believe that proportional giving, giving a percentage, allows us to get there. So the question that comes up, it's a very common question. I write for gotquestions.org, which is a ministry that gets to impact millions of people every month. And I enjoy answering people's Bible questions. One of our very common questions is, do I need to tithe today? Is the tithe for the New Testament? This is a very common question. I'm going to give you the non-presidential debate answer. You know, the presidential debates, wherever they ask them a question, they talk for 5 minutes and never answer it. I'm just going to give you the quick answer. Is the tithe for today? No. It's not a rule. It's not a law for us as believers today. But I still believe that as you look through the scriptures, the idea of proportional giving is a solid principle. Here's why. If you are giving based on, oh, the plate's coming, I'm going to pull out my wallet, I'm going to open my wallet, I'm going to look inside my wallet, hey, I got something, 20, how about a 5? I'm not being strategic. I'm simply responding because the plate's coming and I want to give, or maybe I don't want to be seen as someone who's not giving. It's not strategic. Number one, you don't have any joy in that. Especially when you're trying to calculate if you're going to need that 20 later this week. So God is saying, make those calculations. He's not saying you can't make those calculations. He's saying, do it before you come into the house of God. In fact, we need to make sure we're people of worship before we ever come in here. The band could do everything possible, but if your heart's not ready, the music won't really move you. You have to make sure that you are already ready already. Nice. Nice. That wasn't in the sermon. That's a Holy Spirit special there. So what I think you can see, though, is opening the wallet is not strategic. But if you use a percentage, you can now build something consistent. You can now build something strategic, something that even your church, if you're giving to your church, will see is coming in and that we can kind of make calculations on. You might look in your bulletin and realize there's a number we shoot for in our offerings every week based on the budget we have. And we do that based on kind of where giving has been before. So we make some calculations. We say, these are the means we have as a church. Would I like to bring on another staff person? Sure. But are we able to do that right now? No. So we need to make calculations according to our means. Everybody does this. A church does it as well. I want you to understand, percentage is not the starting point. And I think that's the mistake we've made in the past in churches. Percentage is not the starting point. I believe that setting a percentage can be a growth point, not a starting point. It can be a growth point. Again, we're talking about moving from, your potential into priority and into proportion. You got to realize you're a giver first before you just start saying, okay, this is exactly how it's going to happen. Because if you set a proportion first, then the first time you miss that, you're going to feel defeated. You're going to feel like you're not doing it well. God's not pleased. You're missing it. Giving is about joy. It's a joyful response back to the Lord. That's what it's about. So if you start doing it as a calculation first, that's no good. But now if you start saying, I want to be more strategic, I'm making a calculation, that changes it. So you say, okay, Heath, you're saying the tithe isn't for today. What percentage should I choose? I'll use that, my famous answer. I don't care. But take a look at what Scripture says, though. When you look at verse 3, it says they gave according to their means and beyond their means. And here's the important thing, of their own accord. They did it voluntarily. They made a choice. And then they went with that choice. Maybe for some people, they decide on 2%. Maybe some people decide 5%. Some people in our church, I know, decide on 10%. Make a decision. What we're saying here is when you're talking about being proportional, you're talking about being strategic. You're saying, here's how I want to give now in response to what God is doing. So I would say 10%, giving 10% is not a rule. I would encourage you to think of it this way. I think that 10% can be a goal. Adrian Rogers, one of my favorite preachers, liked to say, don't give until it hurts, give until it feels good. Like, get that mindset. Because we all had that moment when we were kids, we heard people say, it's more blessed to give than to receive. You're like, nice, because people are still giving to me because I'm like six. Okay? So I'm good with that. So you give and you be blessed. But you know, there's that first time that you get to really give something to somebody. You really get to go give somebody. Maybe as a kid, maybe you saved up some quarters and you gave your mom something on Mother's Day. Yes, in case you're wondering, I am aware it's Mother's Day, okay? And I always say things like that, looking around very quickly to see if there are any confused or bewildered fathers or children in the room. Everyone looks like they're good to go. All right, so it's Mother's Day. And so I start thinking about back as a child, that first time you give your mom something. I remember hearing Morgan in our church talking about little Sam bringing her just a handful of weeds. Every mom gets a handful of weeds, don't they, sometime? I always thought those were flowers, too. As far as I knew, those were flowers in my mind, but I guess they're just weeds. But you know what? There's something that just moves a mom's heart, a dad's heart, to see their kids want to give them something. And so I think what Dr. Rogers was saying is if you're like, okay, I'm just gonna give until it hurts, I'm just going to give more than I can, you're doing it the wrong way. You're giving, recognizing it's an opportunity for joy. It is more blessed to give than to receive because you begin to see that you can expand your impact. Your life is about more than you. You start making impact on other people. So I would ask you, are you giving strategically? Are you giving as a proportional giver? If not, and you've gotten to this point where you recognize your potential and you say, okay, I want to give a first fruits. I want to be diligent that God's getting what's first and not what's left. Then you might say, okay, I'm ready to set a percentage. And I would encourage you, if you're at this point or you've set a percentage or you're thinking about doing it, examine that from time to time. Don't just say, well, okay, this is the percentage I'm giving and that's where I'm going to be until I die. I actually encourage you to consider it. Something that I do is I like to give an extra dollar beyond kind of the proportion that I've set for our family's gift. And the reason I do that is to remind me that I can do more. It's a reminder to me that I can do more. I'm never going to call you to make any consideration that I'm not considering first. Don't forget, the sermon works me over for a week before you have to deal with it for 30 minutes. And so I think about this. I say, okay, Lord, I'm going to give this extra dollar. I'm not giving it to impress you. I'm giving this extra dollar to remind me that the reason I'm giving what I'm giving is because I love you. And this extra dollar really isn't hurting me, but it's a reminder to me, why am I giving what I'm giving? Where does God perhaps want to take me? What more impact could I make? When you look at verse 3, it doesn't just say they gave according to their means. Then you start to see this move. It says, look at verse 3 again. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means. So we've seen the idea of being a potential giver and a priority giver and even being a proportional giver, being strategic. But I want you to also see there's an opportunity to be a partnering giver. When you look at verse 4, it says that the Macedonians, these people who were in extreme poverty, these people who were struggling, were begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. It seems as though Paul had been somewhat reluctant to call on these people to give because he knew they were living paycheck to paycheck. He knew that they had financial struggles. He knew that they had a lot of pressures. And so I think Paul was probably that hard of like, if they want to give something, that's fine, but I don't want them to feel compelled to give. Yet they were demanding that they be given the opportunity to partner. Remember last week we said there was a word used in 1 Corinthians 16 that's only used there in the New Testament, that word collection. And that word collection is indicating a partnership. When we look at verse 4 here, it says they wanted to partner. The literal word is a Greek word that you're familiar with, koinonia, which means fellowship. They saw this idea that even though our church is over here, what happens over there matters. Our churches have this tie. All of us as being part of the church, part of the body of Christ. So even though they saw believers hurting over there, they'd say, well, I'm glad our church is okay. They want to be a part of that. So they partnered with them. They were taking part. So when I use this term, a partnering giver, what do I mean by that? I think there's two things that define a partnering giver. The first one is that they're ready to do more. When we look at verse 3, it says they gave according to their means and even beyond their means. They're saying, hey, what more could we do? How more could we be impacting? They were begging them for the privilege. So what they're saying is, if you get so focused on the proportion, which, again, that's where some people start. If you get so focused that I'm giving a tithe or I'm giving my 10%, you kind of forget that God has built you to be a person of generosity all the time. In your finances, in your possessions, which I'm going to say your possessions are different than your finances, your willingness to allow someone to use what is quote-unquote yours. I used to love seeing that in Acts chapter, all things in common. I've told you before about Gary Whitehead, who had this little Ford Ranger truck, and I didn't have a truck, and so many times I'd call Gary at my church and say, Gary, can I borrow your truck? And he'd say, no, but you can borrow the Lord's truck. And he was just serious about it. I mean, so many times I felt almost embarrassed to ask Gary to borrow it. And I mean, that's just how he was. He was always ready to do more, but he was also seeing it as an opportunity. They're begging to give more. They're giving according to their ability and even beyond. And then verse 5, and this not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us. So why were these people moving in generosity? They were living out the great commandments as Jesus had declared. That we're first loving God, then we're loving others. If you're loving God, you're going to be a more generous person. Why do you sometimes fall into bouts of selfishness with the people that you love the most? You say, I don't know why I get like that with them. Because you weren't God first in that moment. If you were honest, you're not God first in that moment. Salvation requires humility. That's what the scriptures say. I've been reading in Hosea, and it was encouraging the people, if you want to be saved, you got to be humble first. You got to recognize you need saved. You got to recognize that you are bad enough to go to hell. If you don't recognize that, then you're never going to want to come to know Jesus Christ. But once you recognize that, you recognize not only do you have to humble yourself to be saved, now that you've been saved, you walk in humility, recognizing that you haven't earned it, that you haven't been walking with Jesus for 50 years, and God's just like, well, he doesn't even need to pray anymore. He's so holy. You never get to that point. In fact, the people that I know who've walked with Jesus for 50 years and have walked in humility are some of the people who seem to have just this overwhelming thought process constantly of, why does God keep me around? It's almost like the longer you've walked with God, the more you recognize how undeserving you are. In those opening days, you sometimes can forget how unholy you really are. And so here he's showing them that they are responding to God. We need to view giving as not a separate act from the service that God calls us to. Look at verse 7. Look at all the different ways that these people are serving. It says, as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. What's that act of grace? It's that act of giving. And so if we think about the fact that God is calling us to emulate his character, when does God choose to be generous with us? If you're saved, you're experiencing the generosity of God 24/7, the grace of God. And so when he says this grace, he's painting this picture that they are giving to people who will probably never pay them back. Are you the person who loans and then pulls out the book and says, I loaned out to Tom $10 today, and I will call him in a week. Make sure I get it back. You say, I don't use a book. I keep it in my head, Heath. That doesn't make it better, okay? If you are a person of generosity, you're not being generous in order that you receive back. Generosity doesn't say, how am I going to be paid back, or how am I going to receive back with interest? So what does a partnering giver look like? In my last church in Pennsylvania, A partner and giver looked like Dan and Lori. Dan and Lori were people that I know were regular givers in our church, not because I checked over their giving list. That was just the testimony of their lives. And Dan was just a calculating guy. I mean, if there was financial stuff that needed to be handled in the church, we went to Dan. Said, Dan, what do we need to do here? And so I hadn't been in the church real long, and Dan and Lori came and told me, if you ever have a need in the church, if some need ever comes up and it's beyond what time, there was a family, and literally I found out the day before, because they were hesitant to share and they were nervous and embarrassed about it, that their mortgage was due like tomorrow, and they needed $1,000. And so I called Dan. I said, hey, you said to call you if I ever had a need. I've got a need, and just trying to see what you might be to help out with. He said, well, how much do you need? I said, well, I need $1,000, but I'm not asking you for $1,000. He goes, no, that's fine. I'll write a check right now. You just come over. And he said, Lori and I set aside money every month for this call. They didn't pay that money every month, but they were setting aside every month. And so when somebody needed $1,000, they gave that. And this was above and beyond their regular generosity. Not just to our church. I'm confident that Dan and Lori are probably generous outside of our church as well, in ways that we never knew. But they were partnering givers. They were always ready to do more, and they ultimately saw themselves responding to God. And really, this is where I hope that this message is encouraging to you. I hope this is where you realize that Pastor Heath did not preach this message so we have more money at church. Because here's the part of the message that will prove that to you. I'm telling you to look for your opportunities to be generous and not in our offering plate. It's down at YWAM, and Nikki made a commitment that she wants to help Hannah on a regular basis. You know, those are opportunities you and I have to not just say generosity is just about the church. This was not about plate-passing generosity. This is about, is your heart a heart of generosity? We share these things not as a bragging thing. I'm not sharing that I give an extra dollar here. I'm sharing this to show you this is my heart. This is just my heart as a believer. This is who I want to be. If I wasn't a pastor, this is still how I want to live, because I'm doing it not in response to the church. I'm doing it in response to the Lord. Someone asked one time, why doesn't our church support Rockford Rescue Mission? Because we're not supporting everything in our church yet. Do I want our church to be more generous outside the doors? Absolutely. But we have to do according to our means. We have to be there first. We have to make sure that we are a church that's being generous so we can do the things that we want to do here in our ministry, not so we can do more stuff inside the walls. I hope you get that. I hope that after 5 years you get that. I'm not about how do we do more inside these walls. How do we do more outside these walls? How do we make a greater impact? You're going to learn a little bit more about that at the vision meeting on the 20th. Another really neat thing that has just come up that I'm excited about is this idea of 1 for 7. This is a website, 1for7.org. It was started by Brainerd Baptist Church. And Brainerd Baptist Church is a Southern Baptist church just outside Nashville. And their pastor started doing some math. So you know he and I are not friends. But Pastor Micah was doing some math. And he said, okay, we have 3,500 Southern Baptist missionaries. What would it take for us to get to 7,000? What would it take for us to double our mission force? So he started doing the math. He said, okay, there's 5.2 million Southern Baptists on average in Southern Baptist churches every week. 5.2 million on average. If every one of those Southern Baptists gave an extra dollar a week to the Lottie Moon Christmas offering, just a dollar a week, we would double our mission force next year. My envelope is on my desk. And I put it there, and it says Lottie Moon. And starting this week, I'm going to pull an extra dollar out every week and start putting it in there. And if we all did that, starting now, and didn't wait until we've already spent half of our money on Christmas presents. Oh, that wasn't just me. Okay. We all started now. Then we wouldn't have to fight to be generous later. I mean, we can't set aside a buck a week to help double our mission force. I'm hoping this really spreads. I'm hoping this is something we really see impact our people. So why should you give? Well, you should give because Pastor Heath said so. Are we awake? No! No! Don't give because Pastor Heath says. Look at verse 8. Look at verse 8 as we take a look at this ultimate idea of why we're giving. What's our purpose in giving? Verse 8. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. We're proving it out. The generosity that we see as a part of God's character. And what are we called to do? We are called to emulate God's character. We're not being commanded. We're not being demanded. We are being encouraged. We are the Corinthians. And we are being encouraged by the examples of others to be generous people, to give. But we do it demonstrating our love. If we say that we love God, but we hate our brother, we're a liar. That's what 1 John says. So if we say that we love God and God is generous to us, but we're not generous to us, saying, okay, so throw something in the plate this week and you showed your love. That's not it. You got to take these steps. That's your potential. You got to make it a priority. You got to look at how you're going to be a strategic proportional giver. You've got to take that step to be a partnering giver. So my question for you through this series is, where are you on this? Where are you on this? Do you see your potential? Do you see? Maybe that's where you've come to. And I've had some people say that. I realize now I can give. I've been so focused because someone told me I had to give 10%. I gave nothing. Remember, I really think the tithe has stymied people from giving. I am telling you as your pastor, do not worry about a proportion first. Just recognize your potential. Recognize your potential. I mean, if every Southern Baptist giving $1 a week can help double our mission force, your gift can matter. And here's why it matters. It's not mattering because the amount that you're giving, it's mattering because now you're bringing yourself in greater alignment with God's character. Every time you bring yourself in greater alignment with God's character, everybody wins. The people in your household who live with you win when you are emulating the character of God. The people that you work with that you're sick and tired of because they just couldn't spell God if you spotted them G-O will be changed when they see you emulating God's character. Not because you shouted at them, because they saw Christ in you. They saw him coming out of you. Potential, you're ready to start. Priority, you're giving God what's first, not what's left. Proportional, are you being strategic? And the coolest one, I think the penultimate, a partnering giver. Expanding your impact, ready to do more, ready to respond to God. All I'm encouraging you through this series is just figure out where you are. Figure out where you are, and then figure out where God is calling you to be. Generosity is not to impress God. Generosity is to honor God. God has proven his generosity through salvation, and we have the opportunity to prove our salvation through our generosity, to really demonstrate to people we get this. The greatest generosity the world has ever known is that sinners who couldn't pay the price for their own sin had a generous Jesus, the Son of God, who made himself poor, coming to this place for us, for beggars, for people who couldn't pay him back, and dying on the cross and rising again and saying, anyone who ever calls on my name will be saved. No might about it. That's generosity. God didn't do it because of what he's going to get back from you. God did it because he loves you. God has offered forgiveness to who? Everybody. Every person. That's generosity. Generosity gives not because of what will be received. Generosity gives because it's a part of our character. I would ask you this morning, have you received the great generosity of God? Have you received the forgiveness that's been offered to you through Jesus Christ? Have you recognized that you're a sinner who can never pay God back and can never impress him, and that the reason that you come to Jesus is because he came to you first? If you've never said yes to Jesus, if you've never received the forgiveness of Christ, we invite you to take that step this morning. Let's join together in prayer.